You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out.
The Phantom Menace was released in 1999. Return of the Jedi was released 16 years before that, in 1983. That means The Phantom Menace was released closer to Return of the Jedi than today. If you wanted to make a That 70s Show now, with the same amount of time that has passed, it would be called That 90s Show. And if those fun facts don't wrinkle your brain, the number of people older than you will never increase. Basically, what I'm saying is that the passage of time sucks. But time travel movies can be fun, and time travel movies have entered this strange new era where once we saw DeLoreans and phone booths and weird sofas with clocks zipping to and from the past and the future, more and more we're seeing time travel movies that are loops or, in the case of long story short, displacements. When time poor Teddy, played by Rafe Spall, wakes up the morning after his wedding night with Leanne, things go from joyful to odd very quickly. He discovers that every few minutes, he's jumping forward to the next year of his life. He must use every precious moment wisely to keep from losing the love of his life and learn to love the life he's losing. I am TCD Wood of the Screener Squad, and I am joined by Melina.
Hello, fellow Time Lords.
Bradley.
Hello.
And Marcos.
Ahoy, ahoy.
So what do you say, gang? Were precious moments wasted in watching this movie?
I would have felt that had I not gone and seen A Quiet Place 2 right after I finished it. So I was like, no, I still had a pretty good day. But yeah, I think I actually would have rather like mowed my lawn than watch this movie, because at least I probably would have actually learned something and something would have been accomplished.
I mowed the lawn today as well and taught my olders to really do a better job at mowing the lawn, and it's just been a fantastically productive day. So this movie is only 90 minutes. So it happened. I watched it. I disagree with every message in it.
Oh, my God.
But it's not a waste of time, is what I was trying to get at, because I think Rafe Spall is pretty funny.
Marcos, you want to jump in there?
I'm of the weird opinion that Click is probably the saddest movie that Adam Sandler made. He had a stint where it's like everything went from a little sad in Big Daddy to super sad in Click, and then he just gave up and made straight funny movies. This was like you took all the humor out of Click and then just made that the movie. And I was like, okay.
Yep.
But I mean, there are parts of it that are really good and parts of it that are just like, well, at least it's only an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's funny you would bring up Click, because it didn't even cross my mind while I was watching it. And when it was over, I was sitting sort of just taking my notes down of what I wanted to say. And then I realized, oh my God, it's just Click all over again. The thing that I think helps in this movie, and Bradley already alluded to it, is that Rafe Spall is a charming dude. And Adam Sandler, in the movies where he's just playing Adam Sandler, is not a charming dude. And I think that's what makes this, in my feelings, better than Click, is that I care about the characters, or at least like them in one way or another, where I don't care for Adam Sandler just doing his shtick with his buddies, barely putting in the effort to say or do something. And you're right, halfway through that movie, they're suddenly like, and now sad, let's learn lessons.
Yeah, That was one of the first movies I ever saw in a theater that I remember, while I was watching it, having the distinct thought, I don't like this movie. I think that actually may be the first time that I've ever... I think that is actually the first time that I was in a theater and I thought, I don't like this and I cannot wait for this to be over. Only for that last third to get so unexpectedly sad and actually so unexpectedly genuine that I was like, wow, they're actually really touching me despite their best efforts. From watching the trailer, I was so ready to come into this review. And when I say watching the trailer, I mean for this movie, not that one.
Long story short, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I was so ready to be like, I was ready to open with, it's Click, but good. And instead, instead, after watching this, what I ultimately kind of came away with was, it's Click, but there's no scenes of a dog humping a duck. And that's really the best I got.
That's all you need to know. Do you find duck humping dogs funny? Watch Click. If you could do without that, then you could watch Long Story Short.
I think Christopher Walken was more convincing than, not that she did a bad job by any means. Noni Hazelhurst as the stranger is playing the Christopher Walken role. And it just kind of seems like, why would you do that, the stranger? Why would anybody ever do that to a person? Like, you don't.
It's a curse.
Exactly. And it's like, you need to learn to live life to the fullest in the moment, man. And he's like, well, how am I going to do that? I'm so charming. And she's like, Alzheimer's.
Right.
Yep. Terrible. Oh. That's terrible.
But Click set up the device that it was like, You're on autopilot. Like, so you're not making decisions. This movie just took away his decision-making ability and without a device. So it was just like...
more memories of what's happened. That's horrible. So
everything was so shitty for him. And it was like, he never really did anything to make it better or worse. He's just trying to save everything from a worse point every time.
I suppose is the idea behind the movie, that if you skip through your life and not focus on the things that you love and should appreciate, you're going to lose time. But this movie was predictable, because movies like this are predictable. So that's fine. I have a sense of, I know where this is going. Okay. When the convention begins and the time jumps begin, there's a predictability to what this movie is going to do. Fine. How are you going to execute these things? That's what I was waiting to see. And it's frustrating when characters don't just stop everything they're doing and explain. Just stop and explain. There's a lot of not listening to people in this that can be funny if handled correctly and annoying if not. This verged into Ben Stiller territory for me at times, where it's like, just shut up. Shut up and everyone pay attention and listen. Just shut up and listen.
Yeah. And I think one of the most frustrating points, and I remember normally I take notes. I didn't do that this time because I just wasn't interested enough to really write anything down. But one thing that really stuck in my craw was that we have what is called the Groundhog Day movie. And that is because Groundhog Day was such a freaking universally groundbreaking film in what it was doing, that now, regardless of what comes after, it is referred to as a Groundhog Day film. Now, it is unfair, I think, to try to hold Groundhog Day up to another movie and try to compare them. It's not fair. You kind of have to just look at it for what it is. However, I think this movie shoots itself in the foot big time by constantly referencing Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And it's not even the Groundhog Day premise.
No.
Referencing that.
It's not the same thing at all. And the biggest problem with that is all it does is make you realize how inferior of a film this is and how shallow the message is compared to a movie which I argue is perfect, and that is Groundhog Day.
And we just got Palm Springs last year as well, which made my top 10, I believe.
It's weird that it referenced the plot of Groundhog Day and then was like, no, that was stupid. Like, later.
How dare you? Yeah. Bad call.
I find it interesting, and they bring this up, Bill Murray's character is more or less cursed by a gypsy, an old woman who, well, actually, I think it was originally going to be an ex-girlfriend who curses him, and then it was a gypsy at some point, and they just said, that's not necessary, it's just going to happen, and we'll move on from there.
Problematic.
Yeah. So if, I know that's an obscure factoid about the movie, but that's essentially what happens in here, is that our Teddy is standing there, and an old woman comes up to him and says, I'm going to give you a gift. It kids. And he says later, this was a curse. What's wrong with you? Isn't it a gift to see all the mistakes you might make in your life and how you can fix them later?
No, that's not life. That's cheating.
Not if you're just living with the consequences of the mistakes and not even the chance to make the mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He doesn't even know what he's doing at any point.
There's a problem in not saying what he does for a living, in, okay, so his bad habit is I'll do it later, but we never see the consequences of him doing stuff later. We're told by his wife and by Ronnie Chang that, oh, you always say that. Let's just go on. You haven't even planned the honeymoon yet, have you? Well, when are you going to get married? That's not enough to put this guy through the ringer. Alternatively, you look at Click. He's an absent father, an absent husband. Let's put him through this misery to see where he can get out of it. Again, I'm not going to say Click's the better movie because I don't care for that movie because it's so obvious.
Well, we get to see Sandler be that person. With this main character, we're told he's that person and we never get to see it. Like, man, when are you going to ask that girl to marry you? You crazy procrastinator. Then 90 seconds into the movie, they're at the altar. And I'm like, oh, man, this guy sure puts things off.
In that he listened to you and took what you said to heart. This guy deserves to have his life totally fucked. I love that.
It opens up with him doing something incredibly impulsive and kind of creepy. And that just doesn't sound like a procrastinating, doesn't take chances kind of guy for us to be introduced to him in the way he's introduced. And it works out what he does. I'm not saying, about it. But they set him up as this chancy, go for it, live life to the fullest person. At least that gesture was. So then later when they're like, oh, man, you're not that guy that we showed you to be to the audience. I'm like, he kind of is. When are we going to see him? Wait for it, and we never do.
When are we going to see the problem that this guy is supposed to overcome? It is told to us mostly just through really contrived dialogue.
Yeah.
This movie is the definition of saying rather than doing.
Yes.
All of the things that we should be experiencing should be shown to us, where we understand that this guy is problematic and he does have this problem. He does have this flaw that needs to be fixed. Instead, I'm like, yeah, he's flawed like everybody, and he's making mistakes like everybody does. The scene where this woman comes up to him while he's standing at the grave of his father with his lovely fiance just comes up and says, you know what? I think you have a problem. I would just be like, get the hell away from me. I don't know you.
kind of having a moment here with my dad. Thanks, stranger.
Yeah.
Talking to a grave.
Mind your own damn business.
Do you think Bruce Wayne got that a lot?
It's actually really weird that this is the point the movie tries to make. And then in the first 10 minutes, I thought it was going to be the opposite kind of messaging, that it's like, oh, he just leaps before looking. Because the movie starts off in the first 10 seconds that he kisses the wrong girl.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Deeply and passionately, by the way. Yeah. That's a hot kiss. That might have been the best film sequence in the whole movie for me. That hot kiss.
Yeah, it actually has a really cool intro of ticking down on a clock. And then it's like, oh, like, kissed the wrong person. But it was like, oh, okay, this is great. And then it's like, oh, that's it. This is the most consistent this movie will be. And it's only like the first 3 minutes.
Yeah, I think the strength of this movie is not the script and it's not the presentation. The good I see in this movie is in the performances of our main cast, Rafe Spall, Zara, and Ronnie Chang. Even the little girl they have is great in this.
Yeah,
and
she's wonderful.
The writer-director of this, who is Kano from the most recent Mortal Kombat, is good as the
writer director.
Yeah, he Josh wrote Rolfe. And directed this movie. Huh. Kano from the new Mortal Kombat wrote and directed this, and he plays Patrick the Doctor later in this movie.
I recognized him, that's why I chose this moniker, but I didn't know he writes and directs as well as
writes and directs rom-coms.
That explains incredible. Why he was the best part of Mortal Kombat, all the zingers he was coming up with.
Well, also, I thought the Patrick thing was a little problematic. Because this film was hanging on by a thread for me, because it insists they should be together because love, Bradley. And after the third argument they had, I'm like, I don't want them to be together. I think they're horrible. They're toxic. They don't listen.
No.
All they do is shout at each other. He knows what's happening right now and he still won't listen. And this is like the third time. I don't like this guy. And then Patrick shows up and I'm like, bam, she should pick him. I hope that's how it ends.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil how it ends, but yeah. Patrick was a great character.
He was.
Long-winded speech. Yeah.
And I think if there's a major problem that I have with this, and it's that, Bradley, I completely agree with you. I pretty much completely disagree with the message, pretty much all the messages that this movie tries to send. I mean, seriously, for fuck's sake, this movie should just be called hashtag YOLO. Because that's as deep as the message gets. And that really is what it's selling. And they make a joke out of it at first with people saying YOLO and even them making a joke. People don't even say that anymore. And then they try to turn it around to where it's the emotional punch at the end. And I'm like, oh, no, that doesn't work. And the reason that doesn't work is because that's what douchebag 17-year-olds who know nothing about the challenges of life have to say about life. And in reality, life is complicated and people make mistakes. And there is a kind of a beauty in the making of those mistakes. That's what makes you learn. That's what kind of rounds you out. If you go through life skipping the mistakes and just skirting the consequences, I hate to tell you, but you're not going to grow. You will make those mistakes again because you didn't learn from them. That's how relationships grow. I think this movie is just incredibly naive in the message that it thinks that it's sending. Ultimately, I'm like, do not show this to 16-year-olds. This is the worst message that you could possibly give a teenager.
Well, they'd probably know it's just for fun, I'd hope. Teenagers, though, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not going to watch some old person movie, says the 16-year-old.
It is an older rom-com. Like, it's not about getting the girl, for sure.
Yeah. That's already established within minutes.
Yeah, this feels like someone reflecting back on their life with regret. So the writer director.
Well, it is weird how much that him and his girlfriend, whose name I forget, I'm terrible.
Leanne.
Don't live at all. Like, I thought that was so odd. Like, you'd be like, whoa, did I just time jump? Oh, yeah, I got crow's feet. Oh, man. And a daughter, I guess. And I'm like, wow, that is going to be a ton of living with that jump. And he's like, not really. I hope I am able to talk to my girlfriend on our anniversary. That's how much living I've done.
Yeah.
Okay.
And their biggest problem in their relationship is that he forgets the anniversary. But the only reason he does that is because the curse starts the day of their wedding. So you're like, that's not fair. So that's not even his fault.
It's almost like jumping Quantum Leap style into someone else's life.
Yeah.
Because he didn't make those mistakes. He is not even conscious of the mistakes he made.
That would be a really hard story to write, though.
He's just suffering the consequences of someone else's life.
Yeah.
So it's just constantly on the back foot going, it wasn't me. I didn't write that. I don't want to read this. I don't want.
He doesn't seem like the guy that would make those mistakes is also a problem with the film, I guess. Or maybe that was one of the points.
Well, let's get to the point here. Let's find ourselves moving towards our final thoughts here. Let's leap forward to Such a Thing. Melina, you were just about to speak on this. So why don't you kick us off with our final wrap-ups here.
I was joking before that I didn't have enough to say about this, and it turns out I have a lot to say about it, and that's I'm getting angrier talking about it. This is actually not a movie that really made me angry while I was watching it. Despite everything I'm saying, I agree with you guys that there's funny dialogue, and I think Reeves Ball is actually very charming, which is why it's disconcerting that it feels like the character who's making these mistakes, whose life he is watching, is like almost a completely different person, like a completely different character who was written. I'm like, it doesn't feel like this guy would do that. And as a result, I think the biggest problem with that is that it just doesn't feel genuine. There really doesn't feel like this guy's earned this. It doesn't feel like we are learning anything. And it doesn't feel like he is either. There were some things in here that actually did get me on an emotional level, and all of them had to do with him and his best friend. And I'm like, you can't help but feel emotionally tied to that, because that is the most genuine thing that this movie portrays, which is that as life goes on, we and our friends go through trials, and not all of them are happy. Other than that, I'm like, there's so many great time travel love stories out there, and this is just unfortunately not one of them, and I really wanted it to be. I'm going to give this 2 out of 5 Twilight Zone episodes written by Nicholas Sparks, because that's pretty much what this is.
All right. Marcos, what do you got?
So I'm going to be a little bit honest. I grade rom-coms on a curve. We haven't had like a good one. I mean, unless you count Spontaneous since like The Big Sick. So it's just kind of like, it's a genre that's kind of struggling to make it back. It would be the same as if it was a Western kind of deal. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's only 90 minutes long, there are really funny bits of dialogue. I'll give a lot of the issues a pass, but it's still like, you're not getting anything out of this. It was like I watched a funny episode of The Simpsons. That's it. Like, it's like, this is what I got out of it, but I'm going to forget it tomorrow because there's no depth to take home. So I'm giving it kind of the same reading as Melina. It's a 2 out of 5 peanuts.
God.
Bradley?
All right. Well, I think Melina very well summarized the problems I had relationship advice-wise with this movie. I used to grand gesture my wife constantly. And about 6, maybe 7 years into our marriage, I actually asked her about it because my sister texted me and was like, that's so fun that you do those big grand things and post them for your wife. She probably feels like a total asshole since she doesn't do anything like that in return. And I was like, what? That's ridiculous. That's not a thing. So I asked her about it, and she said to me, like, yeah, it's great that you love me, but the most you've ever loved me from my point of view, Bradley, is, and I'm pretty sure I've shared this, when I see you across a room and you turn and look at me and smile, like, that's my wife, and we're in love. And I'm like, holy shit, that's beautiful, Amy. I'm so sorry. I never had this conversation with you.
I'm shocked you have 8 kids.
Yeah, well, for now, they grow up. Anyways, so this movie being like, YOLO, like you said, YOLO, do I love you? Yes, let's do something crazy right now, all the time, forever and ever. Like, it doesn't really seem like a genuine intimacy, and that probably is going to lead to a lot of problems down the line. Like, if he jumped to them, would he be all like, oh, no, what happened? And she'd be like, you never listen. All you do is make plans and ignore real life. And that actually sounds like a pretty decent movie.
Anyways, he jumps.
And I liked Patrick. I liked Dr. Patrick. I was like, end up with her. That's a pretty hot couple. So I'm going to give this, like I said, I didn't feel like my time was wasted. So I'll go 5 out of 10 Dr. Patricks.
I think I might have liked this just a little bit more than you guys, but you're saying everything that I'm feeling as well. Movies like this can be sweet, and they can do what I feel is the best science fiction. Movies about time slipping away challenge us to look at ourselves and reflect. And yeah, you can get some deep and philosophical conversations out of original Star Trek or 2001 A Space Odyssey. But you can explore humanity with science fiction without aliens and action sequences in movies like Yesterday, or, as this movie loves to bring up, Groundhog Day. There's a predictability in this movie, and the only winning points it has is the charm of its main cast, Rafe Spall, Zara Newman, and Ronnie Chang, who plays the best friend, who has the best stuff in this, as Melina, I agree with you, pointed out. That stuff hits a little too close to home for me, and those were the scenes that really tugged at my heartstrings. Overall, this movie is just nice. It's not as strong as it thinks its message is, because its message, every second you waste is a second you'll never get back. That's essentially what time travel movies are great for exploring. I just don't think this movie nails giving us a lesson at the end of the day that I'm going to be reflecting on over and over again, thinking about it like I do to this day with Groundhog Day, right? Mm-hmm. So end of everything, getting to talk to you guys now about it, having a few days to digest it. Yeah, it's not sticking with me. It's just fine. It's a rainy day movie. It's a nice movie, and we need more nice movies. So it's just sort of average to me. So I'm going to give this 5 out of 10 Poonie Chews. Invest, mate. Invest everything you got. You won't regret it. Trust me.
Oh,
I don't know what
God.
A Poonie Chew is.
Neither do they.
But as much as that joke works, the fact that we never find out what Teddy does for a living annoyed me. Because you're right. He is paying for this beautiful home. He must have a great job. And it's annoying to see someone suffer the consequences of success.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he's more busy than the doctor somehow.
I found it so hilarious that apparently, yeah, his biggest problem is that, yeah, he works too much, even though not only do we never find out what he does, every time he jumps, he's at home. I'm like, yeah. in the middle of the day. So it was like, if you're a workaholic and that's your biggest problem in your relationship, how is it that you're not time jumping to your goddamn desk?
You're never here. Teddy, you're never here.
I'm always here.
90% of these scenes were shot in our fucking kitchen. I'm always here. Yeah.